Good morning and welcome to this edition of Brass Tack Sunday for the 21st day of February 2021. My name is Corey Lane and I'll be your host. We go until quarter after one. I'm backed by producer and technical operator Dennis Johnson. The first show we had since Friday, so allow me on behalf of the Brass Tack team and especially VOB and Starcom OCM as a whole really to convey our condolences to our fellow moderator and station manager, Mr. David Ellis, on the passing of his brother. We want to say condolences and our sincere support be with him in this time of hardship. COVID, a word that we've called so many times, a word we may not have even known before, even the word coronavirus. Something that we've been talking about for over a year now, and it's had many, many, many impacts. We've looked at it in various contexts, whether it be agriculture, employment, school, what have you. Today on Brass Tack Sunday, we're looking at it from an economic point of view, and our special guest will be government's senior advisor, Dr. Kevin Greenidge. Today, the plan is to engage with Dr. Greenidge and the public, as I said, you know, somewhat economists on call. The main purpose for this is that during the last 10 years, we've gone through a recession in 1992. In the early 90s, we had a similar thing with 9/11. We had a shorter period of that. And for me and others, it seems like this is a more intense period, though shorter than 10 years, though longer than the 9/11, 3 months plus. This seems to be a very intense spot where we've never seen any particular issue affect us this long so intensely. And many people are wondering, what does this mean for the economy? What does this mean for the livelihoods of Barbadians going forward? So I thought it would be a good idea to engage Dr. Greenidge in a forum such as the Brass Tack Forum, where you, the callers, get the opportunity to kind of interact with Dr. Greenidge in a more direct way. I've listened to some of the interviews recently, a lot of good information, a lot of food for thought. But sometimes as interviewers, we may miss the question that you, the public, you at home, you genuinely want to ask. So we give you that opportunity here and now on Down to Brass Tack, Brass Tack Sunday program, where you can call in, you can interact directly with Dr. Greenidge. Now, I want to set a bit of a context for the program. I want to look a little bit at before. I want to look a little bit at now. And I really want to spend some time looking at after. Where are we? Where are we now? And what does the future hold going forward? So the context basically coming right out of the BERT program, what are we looking at? What has COVID done to the economy? And what can Barbadians expect for the future? How can we even assist and play our part to get us back to where we were and beyond before we were struck by this pandemic? So you can line up your calls at 434-1790. In terms of the WhatsApp, 266-4862, I've asked the producer to go through the messages and send some to me relevant to what we are discussing so that I can read them on air. So if you have a burning question, you're unable, you don't have a landline, or you're unable to pick up the phone and give us a call, I would really advocate that you put your question in short, readable context on text and send it by WhatsApp to us that Dr. Greenidge can receive your question and answer the best way he knows how. So give us a call, 434-1790. Give us a WhatsApp, 266-4862. And you're listening to Brass Tack Sunday, brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
You depend on BRC for genuine permaclad, color clad, and permaseam steel roofing products. But did you know you can depend on BRC for installation too? That's right. BRC has several experienced roofing teams to handle your roof installation professionally, using tested and proven fasteners and methods with satisfaction guaranteed. When it comes to roofing, there's no substitute for experience, and BRC's crews will give you a great job at a great price. Have your roof installed by the experts. BRC.
Good morning. Dr. Greenidge, welcome and thank you for taking your time out this Sunday morning to speak with us and the Brass Tack Sunday family.
Good morning, Corey. Thank you, and thank you for having me on the show. Look forward to answering questions and see how we can assist with a better understanding of the economic implications of COVID and the shutdown, etc.
Right. As a bigger part of our program, I'm always eager to remind people, you know, on the weekdays, we really enjoy the cut and thrust and a lot of opinions and so on. And the Brass That Sunday project was explained to me is one where we bring in the experts and we want to focus more on facts. So we are always excited when we have the experts taking time out of the day to bring the facts to the program, and that our listeners can really be educated and edified at the same time. So first of all, I want to start with context. I want you to take Barbadians through in a nutshell. Pre-COVID, the whole restructuring of the economy, preparing the BERT program, the IMF program, and so on. Where were we just before, and where are we now?
Thanks, Corey. So in terms of where we were before COVID, as you rightfully said, we had 2 years implementation of our Barbados Economic Recovery and Transformation Program, the BERT program. And over those 2 years, we would have done quite a bit of work. We, the Barbados team, Barbadians in general, we have done quite a bit of work to reposition the economy following previous 10 years after the 2008 financial crisis, to reposition and repair some of the fundamentals. So that prior to COVID, which hit us in March 2020, at the end of March 2020, we had reduced our debt from the start of the BERT program when it was 179%, including arrears, percent of GDP. We had brought it down to 120% by end of March, which meant that provided, like we always hear about saving for a rainy day, and this is how you save for a rainy day for the government. That provided necessary fiscal space over that 2 years for government to start to do other things. How would that have provided us with the fiscal space? Well, at the start of the program, which was back, before the start of the program was back in May 2018, or end of 2017, let's get a specific point. 179% of GDP meant that 78 cents of every dollar, tax dollar, went to service debt, interest rates and amortization of principal, leaving just 22 cents. Let me get my numbers right. 67 cents went to service debt, left about 33 cents to do all the other stuff in terms of fixed economy, investment, and current expenditures, etc. By March, prior to start COVID, that situation had reversed where because at 120% of GDP, the interest payments and amortization meant that you were spending only 22 cents over each tax dollar, leaving 78 cents to do all the other stuff, which provide you the space and the ability to, you see, invest in roads and et cetera, and garbage trucks and buses. So that's one anchor that was fixed during the program. Really, because of that is why we are able to mediate and weather, to some degree, the effects of COVID. We also had to fix the fiscal part of the BERT program was averaging 7% of 7% deficit, which meant that your revenues minus your expenditure. So 7% deficit means that you have to borrow 7% of GDP roughly every year, about 700 million on average, I'm talking about average here, to close the gap. And of course, that would impact your debt too. So by restructuring the public sector to some degree, especially working with the SOEs and efficiencies, et cetera, within the SOEs, and we know a lot of what happened there. And reining that, particularly in that area, we were able to get the fiscal under a sustainable position where we were running primary surpluses, 6% roughly. And that allow you with that surplus to do a number of things, including paying down your debt, paying back arrears. And I would have mentioned part of the 179% of GDP I talk about in arrears of debt, including $2 billion in arrears. Right now, at the end of March, we're down to just over $100 million. So all the 1. Something billion in arrears were paid off. That's because the fiscal was fixed. Because you have paid back your arrears and your fiscal in a better position, that's kind of almost saving for a rainy day. It meant that, again, we could respond better. We had the buffers to respond better in terms of this crisis. Reserves, another one that was, and I didn't focus on my main four areas that was fixed over the program. Debt, fiscal, I just told you. The third one was the reserves. Reserves were at an adequate level of about $420 million and just before they started the program, which meant that you cover what we talked about, how much reserves you can, how much imports you can handle at those reserves level without doing anything, was about four or five weeks. Now we are at $2.6 billion, and that gives us ample space so that we don't have to worry about if we can afford to import the necessary things we need to respond to COVID now, because you have $2.6 billion in reserves. And we also start to work on growth. I mentioned that, you asked me to keep it in a nutshell. So basically removing impediments to growth, improvements at town country planning, improvements at the port to make it more efficient to get your stuff out, and various improvements at revenue authorities are to ensure that the private sector and those who want to invest can invest, improving investment confidence. So you fix those four things that you called them before, horsemen of economic apocalypse. And that put us in a better position now, Corey, that you asked about now. Yes, we had COVID impact us on 2020. It is a significant impact beyond what we or anywhere in the world have ever seen. Mm-hmm. You mentioned 2000 and the recession in 92 and the recession in 2000 here. Those fail in comparison to what we're facing. Those are about 5%, 6 at most. We are now going to the report that you refer coming out of the central bank. 18% decline in economic activity in 2020. But then dollar cents, end of 2018, our economy had expanded to $10.4 billion. That's a cake that everybody's sharing. Production services and goods, agriculture, everything, whole cake output. That cake has swollen to $10.4 billion at the end of 2018. That's the largest that cake has ever been. And we would have expected that kit to increase in 2019. We had expected, let me get my dates right. At the end of 2019, the kit was 10.4 billion. Yeah. And we had expected that kit to even swell more because of the work that happened in 2020. Mm-hmm. Right? But what happened is because of the COVID, we lost 1.5 billion in that kit. So the kit actually shrank to 8.8 billion. So that's the 18% you see fall off. That's real dollars and cents. Mm-hmm. And we know they related that with unemployment follow everything. Right. So COVID cost us a lot. In fact, we estimate that it cost a lot. Mm-hmm. This year, 2020, before the shutdown, we thought that we had expected and forecast the economy would pick up by another 500 million. So the 8.8 billion will go to about 9.4 or something like that, right? About 5% increase. Why we thought that would happen, we didn't reach the shutdown point yet, because one, the work we were doing in terms of capital expenditures and projects, and we can talk about some of those. Agriculture performed well during the COVID period in 2020, and we expected that to continue as other initiatives go in place in that, agriculture processing and things like that, energy sector. So we expected from our domestic trust that we will have mitigated the impact. But not only that, you remember we have a saying that when the US and the world sneeze, we catch a cold. It works in the reverse too. And there, instead of sneezing, they were expected to breathe better at the end of 2021, this year. They still expect. The forecast comes from IMF because the World Economic Outlook suggests that the world will grow by 5.5% this year. That was in February that they bought out. Well, February 8th. 5.5%. Our trading partners, USA, be 5.1%, and Europe 4.5%, and UK 4.5%. I do remember the number for Canada is 4.7%. So if our trading partners are growing, you know what's happened. We grow. Unless something happens locally, we will. In other words, people start to travel towards the end of half a year because they got their money looking good. They've been cooped up. And why the world expect, why is the IMF and the world and the experts forecasting where we'll grow? Because one, there were a lot of fiscal stimulus in 2020 that no paying effects. Two, U.S. expect to bring a large second fiscal stimulus this year. You hear the talk about the 1.9 trillion number.
Trillion.
And then We expect that in the race between vaccination and virus mutation, vaccinations will win, right? Which means people that need to travel. So that will pull us along. We will, they sneeze, we cough, or we won't put it. Mm-hmm. But even with, so then the shutdown come. The question is, so do we still expect them to grow? Yes. All indications that we will grow. The shutdown, we say, costing us about, best estimates, not $150 million, right? Remember, I tell you between that we expected to add about $500 million to the economy. So 150 is still better, it's still smaller than 500. So it will get 2021 looking better than 2020. Mm-hmm. But the real trick.
You get growth, but less growth.
Yes. But the real trick. But the truth is, we could get more. And it depends on what we do. That's why this lockdown is so critical. If we could get this COVID thing under control and open up with a bang where we start, the government is putting all measures in place to bring forth capital projects and do what it got to do. We get the economy going and the hotels and them take advantage of the various and the businesses that the various assistance programs, particularly BESS and things, to prepare for when the world opens up, then we can grow even more. But a real thing, and what it was discussing is, maybe you're just chatting with my friends, some friends last night online, and the truth is, each vision, each one of us have a key responsibility to play in this here, particularly in this COVID period. Because, I mean, I don't get too much in commentary in terms of social things, but if I leave my home in this period and I expose, it means that I have put stress on the system and reduce even how small the probability of getting this thing under control. Reverse the other way, if I do what you gotta do, each one of us do what your public health officials are saying we gotta do. Each one of us adhere to the protocols, we improve the chances that we will be successful in getting this thing under control. Each one of us will be improving the chances that our neighbors, our friends, people who have lost jobs, etc., get opportunity to earn a livelihood going forward. That's why this period is so critical. So that's the before, the now, and the after, and very succinct as I can possibly put it.
Yeah, you touch on everything. You went to what we can do as Barbadians as well, individual responsibility, because I like action calls, and I believe that mass media should be used for positive action calls where we know what it is we can do. Now, in listening to you, I think that this whole BERT program and what the government has done deserves its own program in terms of fleshing out all of these things, because it sounds miraculous that when I look at the dashboard and I can see that we move from 179% the debt to GDP to 120 in such a short space of time, the level of debt return on the dollar allowing us to do the things you say, because I was wondering how could we get to buy these garbage trucks and these buses and things so fast. The increase in the reserves, though borrowed. One of the things you didn't touch on that I see in the report, the central bank report, and I heard in other interviews, borrowing at up to 14%, then borrowing at 1%. That's a massive difference. Massive, massive, massive difference. One of the things we may do, because I want to open up the lines now, touch on the IMF, the before and the after. The IMF being the political boogeyman before, to the IMF being a true friend or foe in the 21st century. All those things I want to touch on, but the dashboard looked like it's changed a lot to the needles moved to the positive direction. And this is something I would want to flesh out and look at the pros and the cons. One of the things I don't understand that I will ask before I open the line is that it was said that the Barbados economy in the decade of 2008 to 2017 was just about $9.5 billion. And it remained $9.5 throughout that period of time, meaning that there was no growth. But one of the things you said, there was a 7% decline deficit. Why didn't the economy shrink if we were declining by 7% in all those years? Why did it remain the same?
All right. So, Corey, just to make sure, and I like to stay off and getting too technical. I don't like confusing people. But right. There are two measures we're looking at here. When we talk about the overall kit, there are two measures, and not going to get technical, of GDP. Mm-hmm. There's GDP we call nominal, and one we call real. One resetting output, and one resetting prices. Let me explain what I mean for you. Okay. Let's say all Barbados produce was coconuts. So if you produce 10 coconuts, then that's 10 your economy, that's the, in real terms, mm-hmm. that's $10, 10 GDP, right? Mm-hmm. But you might sell the coconuts for $2, mm-hmm. right? So the income in terms of GDP income, the dollars and cents is $20. So that's the key that people matter, because government taxes is on the $20, the coconut, $10 to $2, you understand?
Yeah, you got it.
When we talk about mm-hmm. the economy was a 10, 9 billion economy, we're talking about the goods and services produced at the dollar values.
Right.
So we are accounting for the for prices. So it was about 9.4 and it was ended up about 9.5. Not very much change. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the actual output, then we're talking about the decline, you hear people say decline averaging 0.5% during that period.
Right.
The coconuts produce. We actually mm-hmm. produce less, slightly less, even though inflation. So the difference between the dollar, the coconut amount, and the value is really the prices, right? So I don't want to confuse. So
I get it. So in nominal terms, the economy is stagnated, right?
Mm-hmm. It's stagnated. We didn't really mm-hmm. do much. In real terms, in that output, we actually shrank a little bit, mm-hmm. right?
Gotcha.
That's what I'm saying. But I don't want to confuse and turn again to technical.
I know, right? When we get into technical language, you lose
the
people.
I like when we really talk. Not grow during the period.
Widest cross section of people understand what is we talking about. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to open the lines right now, 21 minutes after 11 o'clock, and we're going to allow the public to ask their questions. What do they want to know about the Barbados economy for, you know, the COVID period and beyond? So we say good morning and welcome to our first caller. You're on the air.
Good morning, Corey. And
hey, good morning. Welcome.
Thanks to Dr. Greenwich. Just two questions. One is, how much money did we gain through the welcome stamp program thus far? Mr. Greenwich?
Yes, Dr. please. Greenwich,
how much money have we gained through the welcome stamp program thus far?
I cannot tell you exactly how much. So there are different ways in which you get some serious feedback there. Corey?
Yes, go ahead. It's from the callers and the producer will deal with that. Just go ahead.
Okay. All right, caller, thank you for the question. Let me just check in for some numbers here. Now I don't know exactly how much we got from the welcome stamp per se. The welcome stamp, there are ways in which you benefit from the welcome stamp. First of all, you benefit because of the application fee, right? And I understand, I don't have the numbers in my head, but more than 3,000 something, maybe 3,700 persons would have taken advantage of that in that period. Don't hold me to the exact number, but in that ballpoint. So we would have benefited from the fees that they're doing applications, right? But that ain't really, in my view, the true benefit of a welcome stamper. A welcome, just like when a person comes on a plane as a regular tourist, and they may pay a visa, whatever they need to come here, airfare, they may pay something. The real value of tourists is their contribution in terms of economic activity. They pay the taxi fare, they're buying food, they're going and buying artifacts, they're visiting Harrison Cave, they're doing all kinds of things. The real value of a welcome stamper is that he or she gonna do exactly those things too, but do them for a much longer period, maybe 9 months. That's the value of a welcome stamper. And with all good intents and purposes, Chief, we don't have an accurate measure of that. Usually we will say that a work as a normal tourist was stay here about 10 days and over that. And they pay between $1,000 a day to $600 at the lower end US dollars. That's our average usual estimate for how much a tourist will spend per day. So a welcome stamper will probably maybe a little less, because sometimes they tend to find more reasonable accommodation, rent a house also. But over the period, they'll probably spend 10 times, 12 times that amount. I know I can't give you a number because I don't know it, but I'm trying to put it in some context and what we would expect from a welcome stamper.